On March 15th, suspected white supremacist extremist Brenton Tarrant, a 28-year-old Australian man, attacked two separate mosques, killing 50 and injuring approximately 50 others in Christchurch, New Zealand. In the immediate days following the attack, various international terrorist groups and other white supremacist extremists have commented on the attack, either condemning and calling for revenge or showing their support. In today's podcast, our analysts will discuss how these various extremist groups have responded to this attack and the implications for future threats.
This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Welcome back to Intelligence Unclassified, a podcast about counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. Join us as we talk to local and national experts in these fields to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on current trends and issues facing our great state. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed, iTunes, or Google Play. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, www.njohsp.gov.
Hello and welcome to Intelligence Unclassified. My name is Dylan and I'm an analyst here at NJOHSP. And today I'm joined by other analysts, Christine, Alyssa, and John. And today we're going to talk about the recent mosque attack in Christchurch, New Zealand, where the white supremacist extremists killed 50 people and injured approximately 50 others. So Christine, before we get into the reactions that we've seen to the attack, can you walk us through some of the details regarding the actual incident?
So what we know so far, on March 15th, 28-year-old Australian male, identified as Brenton Tarrant, opened fire on worshippers at the Masjid An-Nur Mosque and the Linwood Masjid Mosque in Christchurch, New Zealand. We know as of now that 50 are dead and approximately 50 injuries. It was discovered that he was likely on his way to carry out a third shooting before he was stopped by the authorities. Prior to this shooting, Tarrant allegedly posted his manifesto and the link to a video live stream of the attack on several social media websites, outlining his intentions to conduct the attack and espousing white supremacist and anti-immigrant ideologies.
So, Christine, you mentioned that he posted his manifesto online prior to the attack. Can you walk us through the manifesto a little bit and some of the details that are in it?
Sure, Dylan. Brenton Tarrant released this manifesto online titled The Great Replacement. Mainly, it was a rant about white genocide and an advocate for an atmosphere of fear against Muslims. He created this manifesto sort of like he was having an interview with a news media outlet. There was a lot of question and answer sections on here, and he pretty much laid out his ideologies and the reasons as to why he conducted the attack and what his purpose was for this as well. I'm going to actually read one of the excerpts from the manifesto. The question he asks is, why did you target these people? And his response was, quote, "They were an obvious, visible, and large group of invaders from a culture with higher fertility rates, higher social trust, and strong, robust traditions that seek to occupy my people's land and ethnically replace my own people." So in this manifesto, it seems that he's very hung up on mass immigration and high fertility rates. A lot of the reference in this manifesto, he talks about these invaders. And we can kind of link that with our recent attack from Robert Bowers in the Tree of Life Synagogue, because he had posted prior on social media that this certain group was bringing in invaders. So he seems to use this theme throughout the manifesto that we see. Also, in the document, he's referring to himself as European instead of Australian, saying that he grew up in a low-income working-class family. He wrote that his language, cultural, political beliefs, philosophical beliefs, and identity are all European. So what he describes himself as is this ethno-nationalist and a fascist in the manifesto.
So, Christine, we know that Tarrant is not originally from New Zealand. We know that he's Australian. Is there any specific reasons that he might outline that describes why he would target New Zealand specifically?
He claims that he has planned these attacks for 2 years. But he said that New Zealand was not the original target of the attacks. And that leads me to my next question of what he wrote in the manifesto. Why did you choose New Zealand as a place to attack? In which he stated, "New Zealand was not the original choice for attack. I only arrived to New Zealand to live temporarily while I planned and trained. But I soon found out that New Zealand was as target-rich of an environment as anywhere else in the West. Secondly, an attack in New Zealand would bring attention the truth of the assault on our civilization, that nowhere in the world was safe, the invaders were in all of our lands, even in the remotest areas of the world, and that there was nowhere left to go that was safe and free from mass immigration." So it seems to be the common concept throughout this manifesto.
So, Christine, how in line is Tarrant's manifesto with the white supremacist rhetoric that we've seen in past instances?
So Tarrant in his manifesto wrote that he actually read the writings of Dylann Roof along with many others. But he wrote that his true inspiration that he took was from Anders Breivik, who killed 77 people in a terrorist attack in Oslo, Norway, back in 2011. In Breivik's manifesto, it included a 1,500 pages worth of rambling on about his beliefs and plans, very concerned about race. So his manifesto was circulated online through these fascist forums where strategies and tactics were debated.
So you would say that looking at Tarrant's manifesto, that he drew inspiration from past attacks and other manifestos that have been released online?
Yes. Through this manifesto, he has read different readings and reports from other individuals and groups. And like I said, the same concept of the lingo that he kind of included in here, we see with other white supremacists. I mean, and in the manifesto, he cited the 14 words phrase a lot, which is a very popular white supremacist slogan. There was a lot of symbolism and coded language in the manifesto that painted this historical narrative about the victimization of specific people. Like I said, he was very hung up on these mass immigration and high fertility rates. That was a big premise throughout it.
So, Christine, you walked us through how Tarrant drew inspiration from other white supremacist extremists who have conducted attacks and posted their manifestos online, again, with this central theme that the internet is sort of being used by these extremists to further their ideology and inspire each other. So immediately following the attack and the aftermath of the attack, what was the reaction from other white supremacist extremists online? What types of rhetoric were you seeing, and how was that sort of extremist community reacting?
So there was actually a lot of feedback from the white supremacist side regarding the attacks here. When we talk about the social media end, this actually played a big role in the feedback from these individuals. A lot of different accounts were urging others to share copies of this manifesto. They were insisting that Tarrant did nothing wrong and that this Christchurch incident was just a pretaste of what's to come. A lot of people were accusing those on the right that were disavowing the attacks of being cowards for doing so and urged them to own it. So a lot where we're seeing these white supremacists are celebrating the attacks across various venues, from community-specific forums to different alternative free speech social media platforms. Energized users are praising the attacks in the context of other major far-right terrorist attacks.
So Christine, we've talked a lot about how they motivate each other, these white supremacist extremists, to conduct these attacks. How have we seen their conversations about motivating for future attacks, as well as maybe some of the other examples and things that they've cited as justification or similar rhetoric to other extremists in the past? How have we seen that continue to be circulated?
Okay, good question, Dylann. So one of the examples we see is that some of the white supremacist users online were posting clips of Tarrant's live video stream of the attack. They had a lot of the reference with the term, screw your optics. And we see this phrase with Robert Bowers, who we mentioned earlier as well, as he was posting online prior to the attack. So they're kind of using this lingo and getting motivated through each other. A lot of them are urging each other to take part in this effort to translate the manifesto into many different languages. We see neo-Nazis calling the attacks genius. Their social media accounts recently attempted to justify the shooter's actions by using the tragic death of Ebba Åkerlund, who was an 11-year-old killed in Stockholm attack, as Tarrant did in his manifesto as well. We see these extremists calling the attack revenge, saying that this will become the norm throughout our homelands, and that only violence and bloodshed will solve our problems in the long run. So they're very happy that Westerners weren't the target, and they don't have a lot of the sympathy for Islamic invaders occupying white land. So like I said, here we go with this invaders term. So that seems to be the common premise throughout everything here.
So Christine, it's interesting that you bring up the term invaders, and you talk about how these white supremacist extremists have talked about more violence needs to come to further that ideology. And we've seen very similar rhetoric from the international terrorist groups as well, like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. We've seen ISIS and Al-Qaeda use the term invaders to describe Westerners that are quote unquote coming and invading their lands. So Alyssa, can you talk to us a little bit about how Al-Qaeda rhetoric could be similar to this and also discuss some of the reactions to this attack that we've seen from Al-Qaeda?
As far as the similar rhetoric goes, yes, we've seen historically Al-Qaeda in particular talking about foreign invaders of their lands and being crusaders for their cause. And we see both of those terms being used interchangeably amongst the white nationalist groups and the jihadists. So that's one thing that is definitely in common. I think both groups feel marginalized and that they have to seek revenge for people coming into their countries like uninvited. So another thing that we've seen in the past couple of weeks following the Christchurch attack is the response from jihadists. So we've seen Al-Qaeda come out with statements starting 2 days after the attack. We saw Al-Shabaab coming out and had commentary following the president's press conference and, you know, calling for people to find the real criminals behind this crime and how they were going to avenge the deaths of their Muslim brothers. On March 18th, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb released a joint statement with another group in the Islamic Maghreb. And they had a statement of condolences, but then also following that, you know, called for revenge and urging Muslim youth to target all who incite and kill Muslims. So similar to Al-Shabaab, you know, they didn't want this attack to go unnoticed. A AQ affiliate in Syria, Huris al-Din, also weighed in. As well as finally, we heard from Al-Qaeda Core and we heard from Zawahiri talking about how this crime will not pass without some kind of seeking of revenge. But specifically here, he calls for Muslims to take revenge, but to avoid targeting places of worship, to demonstrate that Islam is a religion of ethics and morality. Also, we see here the condolences to the victims, but historically, Al-Qaeda has not targeted civilians in their Muslim countries. He's making it clear that it's coming down from Al-Qaeda Central that any followers or members of these groups should avenge the attacks, but not on places of worship.
So, Alyssa, it's interesting that Al-Qaeda and their official affiliates have told their followers to avoid places of worship and not to target churches, whereas, on the other hand, ISIS supporters have actually specifically called for the targeting of churches. John, can you tell us a little about the ISIS response to this attack and also as well as their supporters? Like, what types of things have you seen them talking about?
So we've seen ISIS supporters online calling for retaliatory attacks for this incident, focusing on churches and beaches and nightclubs, basically soft targets where people congregate, but also focusing on churches and houses of worship. We've also seen ISIS supporters playing off of statements made by an Australian politician saying that policies surrounding Muslim immigration are responsible for the massacre.
So, John, besides playing off of the Australian politician's statement and sort of using that as a means and motivation to inspire additional supporters to conduct violence, what other targets have the ISIS supporters been outlining as possible retaliatory targets?
So in addition to the general popular targets for them, any place where civilians congregate, they're also calling for specific attacks against the shooter's family members and other relatives of his. They're also focusing on specifically calling for attacks against beaches in Australia and other tourist locations around Australia.
Thanks, John, for covering what the ISIS supporters online are talking about. I just want to quickly go over some of the official statements that we've seen coming out of ISIS and their leadership. So the ISIS spokesman actually came out with a statement, which he hasn't spoken in a few months. He put out a statement in response to this attack, as well as the U.S.'s declaration of victory over ISIS in Syria and Iraq. So what he laid out in response to this attack, he refers to the leaders of the Western world as the leaders of, quote, disbelief and apostasy. And he claims that these crocodile tears, in quotes, over the victims of the Al-Noor Mosque and the Linwood Islamic Center in Christchurch are actually the ones responsible for the attacks across the Muslim world. So what he really wants to highlight is that while the Western leaders are obviously, and rightfully so, sending their condolences to New Zealand because of this horrific attack, ISIS is sort of trying to find a way to play it off as claiming that these condolences are not genuine and that the West is actually responsible for countless Muslim deaths in the Arab world. And that's very consistent with ISIS propaganda normally, and sort of ISIS's messaging is that they've always been trying to put out this message that the West is responsible for the deaths of civilians and things like that. Also in his statement, he claims that the two mosque attacks are, quote, nothing but a catastrophe among past and future catastrophes that will be followed by scenes of suffering from all who approach living among the mushrikeen. So what he is saying is what he's referring to this attack as is nothing new. He's pretty much saying that this happens constantly in Iraq and Syria, and it sort of aligns with that ISIS messaging that the West and Westerners are responsible for deaths of Muslims. And it's sort of using this attack as a way for them to justify their violence and to justify their attacks overseas and in the West. In addition to actually finding a way to justify it and sort of calling the Western leaders hypocrites, he also puts out the fact that they want to inspire retaliation. So similar to how Al-Qaeda put out, they want folks to conduct attacks and to target Westerners in response. And then besides the official statement from the ISIS spokesman, ISIS released an issue of their Al-Naba magazine. It's a weekly newspaper that they put out. And in the issue 174, they actually discussed again more regarding the attacks. And they again claimed that this is sort of the norm. They're really trying to push this message that this attack against the mosques is nothing new, and that they're still trying to say this is just another day and another Westerner targeting Muslims, which again, it lines up with their typical rhetoric. And they want to use that as support, saying, you know, this is why we're here, this is why we exist. And they use this to sort of claim that they're protecting Muslims when we all obviously know that they are in fact not. So to ISIS, this attack is just another catastrophe in their environment that they refer to as the constant attack on the Muslim world. So ISIS, of course, is going to latch onto this attack and use it to motivate individuals and supporters to conduct attacks on behalf of the group. Okay, so far on this podcast, we've discussed the various reactions to the Christchurch shooting and the attack. And we've talked about what the white supremacist extremists have been saying online, and we've been talking about what Al-Qaeda and ISIS have said online. To bring it all to a close, I would like to discuss how these groups are sort of going to use this incident to further their ideology and to use it to their advantage. So, Alyssa, how do you think in the future various groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda will use this incident to further their ideology, recruit new members, and just continue to further their goals?
Whenever there's an attack such as the one in Christchurch, and I'm thinking of Charlie Hebdo in France a few years back and the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, and there was also an attack on an Islamic cultural center of Quebec City. Whenever these things happen, both sides tend to use that to their advantage. They use it in their propaganda and they repeatedly use it. They will put it in statements. They'll refer to it over and over again. They'll make posters and things like that you'll see on the internet where they're using this to their advantage. They want to recruit followers by saying, you know, this person or this group has done this to us, and now we have to fight back. One of the things that Al-Qaeda expresses is reinforcing that it's a crime against Muslims and urges retribution for not only the shootings, but here we go with the U.S. airstrikes in Afghanistan and Syria. So this is just another attack against Muslims wherever they are. So it's symbolic, and that should urge people to act, which is what they want.
And that's in line with the ISIS propaganda as well. As, you know, the official ISIS spokesman himself claimed that this attack is just, you know, one of many past attacks and more attacks to come. It already seems like these groups are already trying to use this incident to their advantage.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of statements and pro-jihadist groups come out with, you know, information and sharing things specifically after Christchurch. And I don't think we've seen that for at least a few years in response to an attack.
So, Alyssa, do you think that ISIS and Al-Qaeda will continue to utilize this attack in the future as sort of a motivator for their supporters?
Definitely. We've seen this with AQAP in Yemen when there are drone strikes against civilians or children. And we've seen that repeatedly show up in their propaganda and then use that to their advantage. You know, you're killing children and old people and, you know, we can't have this.
It's almost like these groups are sort of playing off of each other, right? So a white supremacist conducts an attack, and the foreign terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, they're going to use that as sort of a justification on, look, this is why we're here. This is what's going on. Have you seen similar rhetoric with the white supremacists, Christine? Have you seen the white supremacists using incidents of foreign terror to their advantage to motivate their followers to conduct more violence?
Dylan, we're seeing actually a lot of feedback and response coming from these white supremacist extremists. I mean, especially with this incident in Christchurch, it has gotten a lot of feedback from their community members online. And, you know, they're thinking of this attack as something great that was done. Tehran did nothing wrong. They're looking at him as the hero. They're going to use this incident to try to inspire followers on their end to their ideologies and their beliefs. Like you and Alyssa were both saying, they're going to be kind of fueling off of each other to propose their beliefs onto others and to kind of use this to advance their ideologies going forward.
So it's almost like we're seeing sort of a one-up of each other, right? So the groups are going to play off of each other and use their attacks and their violence to motivate their followers from both sides, both the white nationalists and domestic extremists, as well as the overseas and foreign terrorist groups trying to inspire individuals to conduct attacks on their behalf. So we talked about how Tarrant filmed and live streamed the attack, and we know that the foreign groups have used footage from combat overseas and various attacks to their advantage. What types of tactics are each group learning from each other? Have we seen Al-Qaeda or ISIS putting out propaganda calling for a specific use of a specific weapon to use when conducting an attack that we might see the white nationalists adopting or the domestic extremists adopting? Alyssa, could you touch on that a little bit?
Sure. So as far as tactics go, we've seen Al-Qaeda in its early days, especially AQAP, in one of the earliest issues of Inspire magazine, come out with calling for vehicle attacks. We never saw it actually happen from Al-Qaeda. We never saw it here in the United States, that tactic being used, but they certainly encouraged it. And then we saw homegrown violent extremists use it. We saw ISIS adopt that tactic. And in the white supremacist arena, we've seen that from James Alex Fields in Charlottesville. So we have seen that evolution of those tactics being introduced by foreign terrorist groups and then them migrating into other domestic extremist groups.
So while these groups are not only using each other's violence to motivate each other, but they're actually learning from each other on tactics that they can use to conduct violence.
We've also seen that not only with the vehicle attacks, but with the knife attacks as well. We saw them being used overseas and encouraged by foreign terrorist organizations in their speeches and their written propaganda. And then we saw those attacks in Europe, and then we see them in the United States. So these tactics definitely do resonate with not only foreign terrorist groups, but then domestic terror groups are picking up those tactics and using them here.
So they're seeing things that are successful in other places by other extremists, and they're sort of learning from that and thinking, you know, maybe we can be successful with those.
It's definitely, they're making them operational here because those are tactics that are easy to use. You can rent a van or a truck. You can use a kitchen knife. You know, you can use any of those things that are readily accessible without blowing up an airplane or doing a large scale attack. You can do a small scale attack on a soft target and still get the same effect.
You make great points, Alyssa. And obviously, we see that these groups are monitoring one another. And so it's going to be interesting to see if these domestic groups come up with some new tactics that these foreign terrorist organizations might pick up on in the future. And also if Tehran is going to be the new inspiration for individuals to commit future acts of violence, as Breivik has been for the past couple years for white supremacist extremists. Going forward, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I just want to thank our listeners for taking part in today's episode, and I want to thank Christine, John, and Alyssa for their great points discussing white supremacist extremists as well as international terrorist groups. You can subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified on whatever podcast store you're using, and you can also listen to future and past episodes at www.njohsp.gov. Intelligence Unclassified, signing out.
All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.